This is Halftime of the Playmakers, your midweek partner with the live show, The Playmakers, aired on WANM from 12:30 to 2 p.m. I am your host, Jay Scott, telling you what's hot, what's not, from the 813. Tampa, Florida, man. Today, we got some great topics today for you. We are talking about the newly hired head coach, Charlie Ward Jr., here at Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University. We'll be talking some NBA playoffs, a little bit about what's going on with the draft coming up. But I have some great guys in the studios with me. Please introduce yourself, fellas.
90.5, what's up, y'all? It's Jay Lloyd bringing the sauce all the way from Stone Mountain, Georgia to the Flavor Station, man. Let's get it.
Yes, sir. It's your man, JB the King, back here on the Playmakers from the 404. What's up, y'all?
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, E-Class, a.k.a. Eazy-E. How y'all feeling?
Everybody, it's about that time. You know, finals week rolling around the corner. Some people going to be disappearing, graduating, and doing all those things. Justin, you got a countdown for us yet?
Not quite yet, because, you know, my case is a little special. But regardless, we're going to be here during the summer regardless.
It's for sure.
With the Flavor Station.
Yes, sir. We'll put in work. We'll put in work.
Proud of you, my boy.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Speaking of putting in work, the Board of Trustees has been very busy since the departure of head coach Patrick Crary Jr. to Grambling State University. So they dipped into their bag of trips, and they picked out Hall of Famer Charlie Ward Jr. to be the next head basketball coach for FAMU. Now, fellas, he just had his press conference earlier this week in which he was introduced to the campus. We got to hear a little bit about what he wants to do as a program. How are we, one, feeling about the hire? And two, what are the expectations going after this major rebuild?
For me, I feel pretty solid about the hire. I like the way he just talked about his sort of commitment to the basketball program off the court as well, like as a means of building stronger black men at FAMU, regardless, men who care about the community, as well as a competitive roster too. I think that's extremely important. So just to hear him speak about that and hear him speak so passionately about him wanting to just bring the community together through the sport of basketball. I love the idea of that from him, especially from a Hall of Fame coach. I believe he was 65-15 at Florida High coaching that basketball
last
season.
Seven
so this
years.
Is a guy who comes in, has a state title under his belt, a strong-minded coach. I mean, I'm confident about this hire. As far as my expectations for the team next year, I would like to see us make the SWAC tournament again. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But if that doesn't happen, I think that this is a great year for us to kind of regroup, rebuild, and see what we can push for in the next years.
Yeah, I have to agree, man. I think he said all the right things in the press conference. He solidified his commitment to Tallahassee in general. He's been here since 2018. You know, his parents went to FAMU. I think he said his sister or sister-in-law went to FAMU.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So he's committed to the program. And just everything, like he was talking about student participation and wanted there to be more people in the stands. And just he said that it's not a stepping stone, and he tripled down on and said, this is the only collegiate job I was willing to take. So that's definitely what you want to hear after you have a coach that just, you know, left the team. And I'm excited. I don't exactly know what my expectations are, but it seems like he's a coach that players are going to want to play for.
I really hope so. I really hope so. When I first heard about it, I wasn't otherworldly impressed. I want him to prove me wrong. I definitely want him to prove me wrong.
Where's your doubts coming from?
Your last coaching experience, even though it was a state championship, you coached out of high school.
Well, I mean, but prior to that, he did play, like 8 seasons for 2 different franchises in the NBA?
For sure, and you coached underneath Jeff Van Gundy. And I value that more than I do the head coaching experience coaching high school. I don't really care about what you say in the press conferences. You've been in the public eye well before college. You're a legend. We know you media trained. We know you're going to say that. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know you're going to say the right things. We know you know how to work your way around the microphone. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not concerned about that part. And I'm not saying that he doesn't know how to coach. I saw what Curry did. And to see that go from 1 year to jumping out the window and giving this guy 5, I really hope he proves me wrong. But my expectations are pretty low, considering a lot of people are going with Crary. And I don't know how many names are going to come to FAMU off Charlie Ward.
I mean, in terms of support from the Tallahassee community, which again leads to stuff like NIL and recruitment deals, it's already a huge thing that he's going to be back in Tallahassee. Get people from across the tracks supporting this decision. when's the last time you seen FAMU basketball in like the headlines for college basketball talk on Instagram?
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously that's bringing a lot of eyes. I'm glad you did bring up players though. One of the players I saw at the press conference who I was very surprised to see because he had entered the portal just a week before, Jordan Chapman. Now, Chapman was a great facilitator for us. He was able to make his presence felt on offense and defense.
Yeah.
He's one of the few players left over from the previous Curry regime. So could we, I don't even know what to think about him being there. Is it solid that he's going to be there? Is it concerned as to how he's going to mesh with the next class or the next group of players that Coach Ward brings in?
He has to be the guy, right? As of right now.
I mean, I would assume so. Coach Ward has had the job for maybe 9 days. So
right. In
terms of when we asked about like recruitment and everything, he talked about the quality and character of players you want to be in, not really any specifics as to whether he's going to go in the portal or out of high school. We can assume though that they're going to be of good quality and good standing. So in terms of athletics, you know,
that's what I'm concerned about.
We'll wait to see.
That's what I'm concerned about. I'm all for, you know, recruiting upstanding young men and productive members of society, but we just won our first SWAC tournament game. I'd rather see more success than that, than, you know, public service.
That's understandable. You said something interesting, though, that I think I could kind of challenge you on whether or not you respect, like, what he did in high school as in terms of him bringing that to college.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ability to connect with young men across all levels is going to be important for a job like this.
Yeah, for sure.
So I do think that it's important to look at his high school resume, too. As well as his professional resume, what he was able to accomplish in the NBA, as a coach, as a player. Guy who just understands how to make it as a student athlete as a whole.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be important for the team as well.
Yeah, that's if you look at his resume as a, like, if I was playing under him, that's a guy that I would listen to.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's been where I want to go for sure. He's a guy that he's a guy that I personally would listen to. I'm just, I mean, kids are getting paid now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you coaching high school kids who's trying to get to college. Now people are jumping ship, not because, oh, I think I have a better chance of winning. No, they're paying me more. It's different. It's just different.
And that's where I think his touch in the quality of character, people he's going to recruit, will make a difference in the players that he brings in. Because one of the things he said during his press conference was in the players that he's looking for, not only does Union want student athletes and student leaders, people who want to be involved, but people who know how to play their role. He said that, you know, he remarked that he has been the bench guy. He's been that take the last shot guy. He wants guys to not just come in like with their egos, but to come in and understand that you are part of a program now. And for in order for this program to work, you're going to need whatever role is required of you.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the content of character as a recruiter and not only as a coach will really set him apart in terms of SWAC coaches and just coaches in general.
I love that point because, I love that point because honestly, if you can't be that type of guy who gets assigned a role and embellishes your role and really makes the most of it while also still putting yourself first and thinking, oh, I got to go get a bag. So, I hope that's the culture that he instills in these guys and really builds a family here. He's got 5 years to do it.
Yeah.
He has plenty of time, man. And if he can just build that culture, man, and just have and connect with players and even just Tallahassee in general, just building up the FAMU brand. If we can get people from Florida State to come watch the games or just in general, just building everything up, I think he's the right coach to do it. I think he's the great, like, franchise setting, culture building coach. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if the success will necessarily be there in year one, but them giving them a 5-year contract just solidifies that they want this to be their guy.
Yeah, they have confidence in him to get the job done.
So
one of the last points we'll touch on is he has an acronym that's going to be the team motto going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Using the acronym PACE. So the P stands for prepared, the A stands for accountable, C stands for competitive spirit and committed to excellence, and the E stands for effort and execute. Hopefully we see those things translate into the court come December when the Rattlers get back on the hardtop. Now moving on to some football. After the spring game, we had a few departures with the opening of the transfer portal. Some big names have entered the transfer portal for FAMU, and as of right now, there's a lot of question marks surrounding both the offense and the defense. So defensive lineman James Ash has entered the transfer portal. He has also been recently committed to Auburn University. So big shout outs to him. I can't blame him if you're going to leave that. A swag
major
team.
Major pickup for Auburn.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Maybe they'll make the playoffs this year, right?
I don't know. Tristan might have something to say about that. At receiver, Quan Lee has also entered the transfer portal. So has tight end Kobe Gross. Those are huge losses on the offensive side of the ball. At quarterback, there's still a lot of question marks as to what they're going to do next season. I've heard rumors that they're going to go back into the portal to try to find a quarterback. But at this point, that's
got
now
three
five,
right now.
That's five people in the quarterback room. Very interesting as to what they're going to do. What would you rather see them do if they were to pick up anybody out of the portal? And what do you think the root of the issue is with players entering the portal at this point in the season?
For me, it's always going to be money. For me, that's dude going to Auburn. I mean, aside from, like, I don't know whether that he grew up always wanting to play in the SEC or play, like, you know, but me personally, if I knew I was raw like that, I would rather ball out in the SWAC and y'all gonna notice me because my numbers jump off the page than go be somewhat mediocre in the SEC, if that makes sense. Like, maybe I'm a rotational guy. Like, no, you gonna see my 30 sacks. Yeah. You know, like, that's just me.
I mean, he was an all-swag defensive lineman. So, like I said, going to Auburn doesn't shock me. I don't blame him for it whatsoever. But it's a huge hit.
My bad. You also got to remember that all SEC teams are not created equal. I joke about Auburn potentially making the playoffs, but we have to be honest with where the state of that program is at right now. That is a place where he could potentially make an impact. As opposed to him going to, like, UGA, where it's a little more slim. But Auburn is a rebuilding program to where he maybe could see some time on the field and make more of an impact on that team rather than some bigger, larger SEC schools.
That's real.
But I don't know. To me, it kind of screams just a lack of trust for the system right now. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, we saw what the spring game looked like, we saw how just our fan base reacted to it, to the many issues on the team, I think that rubs off on the players as well, too. Obviously, last year already being a down year for them. I just think it's a lack of trust with where the program is headed right now, which is unfortunate to see, but I'm not going to rule out that money aspect too.
Yeah.
I can't ever rule out that money aspect with the times that we're in.
In terms of moving, like, in terms of the direction of the program, I would love to see some form of uniformity. It would be cool if we hopped in the portal and tried to get a better quarterback, because I'm not overly impressed with any of the three guys that I saw at the spring game. But at the same time, like, I kind of like, not to be a homer, but like what the Miami Heat do, like, hey, I love our guys. Our guys are going to get it done. So almost like we got these guys in house, we're going to lean on them.
Yeah, just commit to one or the other. Like, if we're going to go out and get talent, go get talent. If you want to grow your guys, grow your guys. Being in the middle as a college program doesn't
It's a terrible
help.
Look, bro.
Especially after the season we just had. So,
right.
I would love to see more direction.
I was going to say, you talking about winning with our guys. Our guys lost to Mississippi Valley State, man. I don't know about that. I don't know if we got enough.
I hate bringing this back up, but it's so terrible.
Wrapping up our FAMU segment, we just want to give a shout out to the women's tennis team and the men's golf team as they claim conference championships this year. I know we guys, we don't really cover you guys the way that we should, but you guys are appreciated.
Especially for how successful
you are. For real. You guys are appreciated. Congratulations. So we're going to move on to our next topic. In some NCAA news, Nate Emmett has chose the decision to take Tennessee over Duke. For his commitment. Yep. Is the right decision? And how can his impact in the SEC be felt considering the season they just had last season?
I think it's the right decision for him. Obviously, you like the idea of pairing up with top-end talent at Duke, specifically the Boozer Twins. But this is more of a chance for him to shine on his own. I'm not so sure that it's going to move the needle. We obviously know that not all freshmen are able to do that. Not all freshmen are able to be at the level to take a team to a Final Four like a Cooper Flagg or Zion Williamson. Sometimes you are just a VJ Edgecombe, or, you know, you're there to develop.
It's hilarious because how much you were hyping up VJ. Like,
shout out to VJ.
Yeah, but I think VJ was a type of talent that had his own set of issues, his own set of flaws that weren't necessarily conducive to producing at that level.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't as NBA ready as some of the other guys we've seen be able to really be the X factor for their team and be the key player. So I think for Nate Ahmed, this is a good place for him to learn under professional basketball environment. Obviously, Tennessee's a top-end program. They're going to be, I think, in my eyes, they're going to be right back in the tournament next year, so that's going to be a great experience for him too. But also, this is a chance for him to, if he is the type of talent that we think he is, which is a projected top five pick in the NBA draft in 2026, he's going to have a chance to show that on his own without necessarily having to lean on and share the ball with another pair of guys who could potentially be lottery picks.
Yeah, I honestly love the move. I want to talk more about Coach Rick Barnes. He was the coach for Kevin Durant at Texas, and it was a big reason why Ahmed said that he wanted to go to Tennessee. You know, I think it just fits the way of style that he plays. He definitely is like a KD disciple. 6'9", 6'10", can dribble with the best of them. You know what I'm saying? Only thing that he needs to do, he needs to put on weight, and I think being in the SEC will help him make him have to be physical. You know what I'm saying? So I love the move for him, and I hope nothing but the best. That boy can hoop. I was watching highlights earlier. Yeah. That boy can hoop. I think he shot 90% from the free throw, 47% from the field, 40% from three. Like, that's a real hooper. So I think it's a great move for him.
I like the point you brought up about, like, his comparison to KD, because he has kind of that lanky figure, but he's able to dribble and shoot well. I know that he really likes that mid-range, and a guy at his size being able to pull up from mid-range is something that's far and few in between.
Yeah, especially now where the game is leaning away from mid-range.
Yeah,
coming into the game already having that skill is going to be major for him.
Yeah, I mean, y'all pretty much hit on everything, man. Congratulations to him, and hopefully it'll work out. This next season is going to be interesting for sure.
So now that, you know, Duke missed out on this opportunity, in terms of the roster that they have now coming in with recruits, how do they recuperate after having pretty much not necessarily a letdown, but being disappointed that they didn't take it all the way with Dad Flag?
I mean, you rebuild with a guy who could potentially go number one in the next NBA draft cycle. Like, you're rebuilding with that guy, and you're coming back with Isaiah Evans, excuse me, I forgot his name for a second, but Isaiah Evans, who was kind of a stud towards the end of that season, definitely a sharp shooter for them. So, I mean, I think they're in a good position still. Obviously, you can't have every five-star pick ever.
Yeah.
And if you're rebuilding with a top five guy in the class, then I think that's still a win for you. We would have liked to have got it done this year, but, I mean, it is what it is.
It's Duke. I think they're going to be all right.
Basically.
They wasn't missing then.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been cool, but it's Duke. They always land on their feet.
Moving on to some NFL, the draft is just around the corner. A few teams are going to be on the clock, but there seems to be somebody that is slipping down some of the draft boards. The minute that his number went into the rafters, his stock went down. Shedeur Sanders is slipping down in the draft. Right now, would you properly rate him underrated, overrated, underutilized, possibly?
I would say that he's underrated.
Underrated? Really?
I think people overly hate on him, so I would say that he's underrated.
Why do you feel like they overly hate on him? Expand upon that.
I think that his last name does have a big part to play in terms of, like, who he is, and I don't think he shies away from that. But if his last name wasn't Sanders and you just looked at the film, and if you looked at the numbers, this dude is impressive, honestly. He's legit, bro. He's legit. I wouldn't say that he's like a generational, you can't miss on this guy talent, but if my team needed a quarterback and he fell to me, I'm taking him. I definitely don't see him fall into the second round. He has the tools, in my opinion, that could, I'm not going to say save somebody's franchise.
That's a crazy stretch.
Yeah, I'm not going to say he's saving anybody's franchise or anything, but I don't see him losing you games, and I think that's important in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he's accurate, and he makes the right decisions, and I'll give him credit for, you know, the situation that he was in. Like, he made the best of it. I think he's getting a lot of hate for his name. I think it's weird how his draft stock has fallen and nothing has really changed much other than
nothing.
Like, literally nothing has changed.
We haven't seen him play. His pro day was good.
Yeah. So I think that aspect is weird, but in terms of being rated, I think he is a late first round type of guy, type of player. I don't think he can necessarily go to a horrible team and change. I wouldn't want to see him on my Browns. I wouldn't want to see him on the Titans. Like, I don't think he would be a good fit. But if he falls to a team like the Steelers, you know, who have the weapons, who have the talent, who have the coach, I think he'd be perfectly fine. So if you put him in the right system, I think Shedeur will be an elite game manager, but I don't think he's necessarily a franchise quarterback. And I'm honestly happy that he's falling out of the top 10 projections.
Do you feel like that alleviates the pressure that he has on a program, or is it that it's deserved that he didn't necessarily live up to the hype that requires a top 10 pick?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, this QB class is weak, like straight up. Yeah. I don't think.
I think it's very top heavy, not necessarily weak.
That's fair. That's fair. But I don't know how many franchise quarterbacks are coming out of this. And I don't want teams to reach. I think teams always reach for a quarterback and it doesn't work out. I think it's good that his stock is falling and he's going to be in a better situation rather than putting him where he has to carry the team on his back. I don't think he's that type of player just yet.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that point. I'm glad that you touched on it. I would say that he's properly rated to me. I obviously think that there's some pros with drafting him, too. You mentioned his accuracy. Mm-hmm. Definitely an accurate quarterback. The arm strength surprised me, his pro day for sure, too.
Yeah,
that's one thing he's definitely worked on.
Yeah.
My biggest concern with him is sometimes his timing is a little off on his throws. He can hold on to the ball for too long, and that can lead to some turnovers. And also, he's not the typical mobile quarterback that we see these days. The athleticism is lacking in that aspect. And if you're in a bad situation where if you're a top five team, you reach and you don't have a good offensive line, mm-hmm. that's going to lead to some problems. So I think it's definitely better for him if he ends up slipping a little bit. Obviously, that may not be what he wants as far as contracts and just sponsorships and deals. You want to be in the top five, but for him to end up on a team like the Steelers that you mentioned, I think that's a good fit for him too, as opposed to going somewhere like the Giants, where we all know how that's going to turn out. Like, it's going to be a disappointment, in my opinion.
Well, necessarily, that's why they're currently reaching up. So right now, the Giants and the Browns are fielding they're fielding options to trade up to a higher pick. Necessarily, I think it would benefit more the Giants than the Browns to do that, just because you don't have a lot of pieces to build on already if you are the Giants. But what are you guys' thoughts? Who do you think would benefit the most from reaching up in this draft?
I think I would lean the Giants too. I think that's a team that just needs some talent on their team whatsoever. So even if it's them moving up and not necessarily taking a quarterback, taking a top-end edge rusher to pair with Thibodeau, great move for them.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get your hands on a Travis Hunter.
And that's who they're eyeing, too.
Yeah.
If they're eyeing that number two spot.
He's not falling past the Browns. He's not falling.
But if they're eyeing that number two spot, if they can swap with the Browns, they can get that two pick.
I mean, honestly,
I got to be blown away.
Yeah, I would need a lot. I ain't going to lie. I think.
So what would a trade package look like, though?
I need your soul.
Crazy.
Real rap.
I don't know. If Travis Hunter.
Three first round picks.
I'm not passing up on Travis Hunter. Honestly,
real rap.
I'm not passing up on Travis. I think the Giants would have to give up too much to do it if they wanted to move up and swap with the Browns. Yeah, and I don't. It's not worth it. You can take Abdul Carter.
You have Travis Hunter, but you don't have a future for the next decade.
Yeah, like don't do it.
Before we move all the way up, Shedeur Sanders is the truth. I think we overlook how good he is because he doesn't like jump off the page at you. But just because he isn't like an otherworldly athlete doesn't mean that he's not good. We've seen him make solid throws on the run, which is a skill in the NFL that you need. Just because he isn't a run first guy, or even he's not the fastest guy in the room, but he's definitely not slow. He's definitely not Phillip Rivers. He can move. He can.
Why you catch it straight?
I love Phillip Rivers as much as the next guy, but you know, I like me in a race. You know?
So would you draft...
I guarantee he's talking you down.
Would you draft Sanders in the top five?
That's what I'm thinking. If you're the Giants GM right now and you have the opportunity to make that trade, are you taking Shedeur as your number two?
Or even better, are the Saints taking him at nine?
I'm not taking Shedeur if Travis Hunter is available. But if Travis Hunter is not available. But it's also dumb because I have three quarterbacks already.
Yeah. And that's what I was like
I'm
really getting at if you're the Giants.
For sure, but I have money tied up in y'all.
Yeah.
And well, I have to pay you first round money now. It's so dumb. I really don't get it. Like, if I didn't have three veteran quarterbacks in my room that I paid money, I would take them.
I think that every quarterback comes with a set of flaws.
Yeah.
And for him, that lack of mobility is not enough for me to say he's not a good quarterback, but it raises some concerns if you're going to end up going to just a bad offensive situation. If you have weapons who can't get open and create separation, if you have an offensive line that can't hold up for more than a second or two, then that's a concern, because it's not just about him being able to like you know, sprint down the field or just run out the pocket and make a crazy sidearm throw. Like, we know that he has a little bit of that in his bag. I'm looking more so, it's more so certain aspects, like when you escape the pocket, like what do you do next? Are you able to make a guy miss? Like, those are certain things I haven't really seen him be able to do, which he might have to.
I think he can get you 7 yards and slide. You know what I'm saying? Bro, it's just the blasphemy, bro. Like, I legit saw an article the other day that had Tyler Shuff. Y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Buddy who played 7 years in college.
Yeah, he's like 25, 26.
Yes, yes. Glass Bones himself. Him. I saw them talking about he could go higher than Shador, bro. Blasphemy. Straight blasphemy. Just because his dad is one of the greatest of all time doesn't mean that we got to put smut on his name, bro. He's the truth.
And I think even if he falls, your dad is Deion Sanders. You're getting a good deal. I can guarantee you, because they're not going for anything less. I mean, the best you got was a bowl loss, and your number is retired at Colorado. I wanted to get under his skin.
That's a team thing.
It's a team thing?
Yeah, the Colorado team lost that bowl game.
Okay, no, I understand that.
Yeah, Travis Hunter lost that bowl game too.
For sure. Travis Hunter is also a Heisman winner. Of only like
who was throwing him two
to three, of only two to three. We got it for defense mostly.
Mostly is kind of crazy.
I mean, let's be honest. He was a great receiver. It wasn't just like, oh, he's just sprinting down the field, getting past guys, and Shadur is making some crazy throw or something like that. Like,
it was
like
a couple of them though.
There were definitely a couple of them, but some of those were just like insane Travis Hunter catches. Like,
for sure.
Insane Travis Hunter flexibility, agility. Like,
yeah.
But in terms of that, doing it while backpedaling too. So I'd say it was more of a defensive effort. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on their numbers being put in the Ring of Honor and retired at Colorado.
They made Colorado football relevant again. They made it cool.
Yeah.
They made Colorado cool. I don't see why not. I do think it's slightly disrespectful. I didn't even know.
Slightly
I was listening.
I
was listening to the live show on Saturday, and I didn't even know Colorado won a national championship.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and that's where a majority of it's coming from. It's not the matter that they actually did it, because people are hearing the points. Okay, yeah, they brought Colorado back from relevance, or they brought Colorado back to relevancy, made Colorado cool again. Cool. They just graduated. Yeah. They didn't technically graduate either. They're going to the draft. So these players
it's
haven't...
It's not like they finna come back and play. So
these players haven't played 4 years at this institution, and their numbers are not retired. You want to know some other players whose numbers are still not retired and are legends and have played almost 4 years? Tim Tebow's jersey's not retired at the University of Florida.
Crazy.
What was the rest on that list?
I don't think Devontae Smith's number will be retired at Alabama.
Crazy.
In 4 seasons. Like, I just don't think...
I think
this is my opinion. I think it is a very rare case when your number should be retired at the college level.
Absolutely.
I doubt Colorado will ever get another Travis Hunter. And dare I say, I don't think Colorado will ever get another Shadour.
They have a quarterback on that roster that could be better than Shadour next year.
Stop it right.
It's not far-fetched.
Stop
that, that's not crazy.
You watch the spring game highlights? I know it's a spring game, but Shadour's the truth.
I don't know. If they were going to do it, regardless, I think it's way too early. And they could have.
What's the problem?
I don't really have much of a
problem.
They're
not going to go back and play. They can't go back and play. So once you're done, like, for example, like, or maybe this is just like a misconception of mine. Like, when D-Wade retired, let's just, like, put him in the Hall of Fame. Carmelo retired, put him in the Hall of Fame. I don't see why we have to wait.
Okay.
These are guys who play dang near 15 years in their league. D-Wade is a guy who won a national championship is crazy.
Yeah, no, but it's the
NBA championship. Like, it's just a different standard for that. Especially when we're talking about a professional sport. When you're talking about a college program, I mean, a kid could come in there and be better than those two guys in the next 4 years. And you telling me that he can't wear Travis Hunter's number? Travis Hunter can't pass that number down to him. Shadour can't pass his numbers down to the next great quarterback. I think that's a little asinine.
Be 11 or 13, or be 1 or 3. Can't be 12, you can't be 2.
I don't know. I understand it from like a business aspect and all
like
the revenue.
Celtics.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
It's all
ain't
about
nothing wrong
revenue.
With that, bro.
And it's not, but I just don't, I for one don't feel as it's deserved right now. looking back at it, if we were to come at 10 years and Colorado is still on the upswing that they are now, and they're the level of college football that we expect of them now,
yeah,
that's when you look back and be like, man, those are some catalyst guys.
Yeah.
The best we can have for them is a 7-5 season. And that's what we're going off of.
But on the flip side of that, right, what if they're absolutely abysmal how they were before they got there? And then you could say, dang, when those two guys were there, they brought...
They went 7-5. Like, that's the last
point. The year before that, they won 2 games.
So, in those... So, you're telling me 9 wins... The mic went back because they knew it was hearing some hearing some crazy stuff. 9 wins in 2 seasons guarantees you a spot in the hall retired jersey in the stadium.
I'm just saying, like, for where Colorado is right now, this is definitely not where they want their program to be within the next few years afterwards. Like, this isn't the stopping point for their program.
They haven't even made it to the conference championship yet.
Like, they're aiming to be a much better team in the upper echelon of college football as a whole.
Yeah.
And obviously, those are two guys who are going to have a big impact on the culture and just players being willing to come to Colorado in general. But until you see the benefits of that, then it's kind of pointless to kind of, you know, retire their numbers already.
You know, the company that they're joining in their numbers being retired, I need to cut you off, Justin. We'll go back to you. But two of those players are national champions. Their only national championship at Colorado.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just saying, like, because you don't even necessarily see the benefits of that yet. Like, it's not like Colorado has they've come back, bounced back with a top 5 recruiting class because, you know, they had Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders who went crazy, and that allowed other people to see the potential of Colorado and want to go there. They haven't seen that yet.
Right.
They haven't seen their playoff appearance.
Right.
They haven't seen, have they even won a bowl game together yet? They didn't win a bowl game.
No, they didn't win a bowl game.
They didn't win a bowl game.
No, like, they did not.
There's just so much more that you would expect the program to accomplish, and then if they were to do that, you could say, hey, these two guys right here, they were a huge part of allowing us to bring them there, but we haven't seen that yet, so I just think it's a little premature.
That's we're gonna agree to disagree on that one. I really don't see the difference between if they cannot come back and play, they can't change their impact on the school anymore, so it doesn't matter what they do today or 5 years from now.
Let me ask you,
once they're no longer playing, they're no longer playing.
I'm going to ask you this and then we can move on.
And everything else that happens at the school is out of their control.
Let me ask you this and we can move on.
Yeah.
If Deion Sanders were to not extend and he took another job somewhere else and then all of a sudden Colorado was back to being poop again, would their jerseys still deserve to be retired because they gave them 2 exciting seasons that didn't really amount to anything at all?
What you want me to do, take them down?
Yes. Honestly, I was gonna say no, but like, yeah, I just don't. I'm not a big believer in college jerseys being retired. I think it doesn't make sense.
Unretiring the jersey is crazy.
I see both of your points.
Well, we will see what amounts to Shedeur, Travis, and the rest of the NFL prospects going into this week. We have a first round, so stay tuned. We get our reactions moving forward. Now into the NBA, the playoffs are live and in effect. We've seen some exciting games in the first weekend. And moving on into this week, what are we thinking of the matchup so far? What have been some highlight players? And how do you think these series are shaping up to be in the future?
My glorious king can't go out like this, man.
It's looking a little
rough. It's looking like
a little
that,
rough.
Though. It's looking more than a little rough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that was my biggest surprise. The Timberwolves were not scared, like, at all.
They weren't playing at all.
Yeah, they weren't scared of the star power of L.A., LeBron, Luka. Like, they went out there and they played their brand of basketball. And the Timberwolves, I mean, they have depth. Their bench is amazing. You know what I'm saying? They have all the talented pieces. And shout out to Chris Finch because he's not afraid to bench players who aren't playing well. Naz Reid played more minutes than Rudy Gobert because Rudy Gobert wasn't cutting it. And he's not afraid to make those decisions. That's what a playoff team needs to do, especially a scrappy team like the Timberwolves. And shout out to Anthony Edwards, that 50,000 out of his count right now for what he said.
Which was totally unnecessary, by the way.
Totally unnecessary, but you know.
Just skip it at 300 mil.
AE going to do his thing, so.
For sure.
That was definitely the most surprising thing for me, and I think it's going to be a great series. I thought the Lakers would go out there and destroy him, I'm not going to lie. So I think it was a great, great first matchup, and we'll see how it goes today. They play tonight, right?
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was really surprised with the Golden State and Houston game. Not only Houston kind of battling throughout the game, going down early, fighting back in the second half to get in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely surprised by the performance of Jalen Green. I was extremely surprised. Yeah. And obviously, I know that Jalen Green is a guy who's always inconsistent, even though he has the tools to be a very special player. He's an athlete. When he gets hot, he's one of the best shows in basketball. He's just wildly inconsistent. And for this to be the first game for him to come out playing like that, it was a little concerning. But I was also surprised with how good Steph looked. And I know that might sound crazy to say because we know who Steph is.
Nah, that one shot he had was ridiculous.
This Rockets team can throw some guys at Steph. They're ridiculous. Athletes, defenders, and they did. And for him, it looked like an easy 31 for him. So I was surprised with how easily Steph was able to get to it in the first game of the series. I'm just looking forward to see how Houston is able to make adjustment and who's going to be that guy that can step up and be their main player for them alongside, you know, Alpie.
Yeah, I mean, for the Rockets, I didn't really see their playoff run necessarily going deep, but I feel like they had a lot to prove just in terms of who was going to be that guy. You know what I'm saying? You have this young team. They did a great job. The 2-seed, they had a phenomenal season. No matter what happens, you're going to walk away smiling. Right, but you need to solidify who is going to be the core, who is going to be the face of my franchise, because you have rumors of the KD trade happening, you have rumors of other stars coming to Houston. You need to go out there and make sure who is going to be that player that we're going to center around. And Jalen Green, what do you go, 3 for 15?
It was something bad. It was like some Jontay Porter stuff going on with that.
That's crazy. That's great. So yeah, I hope Jalen Green picks it up. I've always never been able to properly rate him because every time I watch him, he plays a different game and he's shooting differently, or he's amazing, or he's trash.
Some days he takes the under.
And Fred VanVleet ain't do nothing either. You're not safe. He's been kind of scaping under.
Yeah,
Fred,
but he
you.
In 30s.
Whatever.
Him, he on prospect.
Shout out to Sengun though. He won me my parlor.
I'll be the one to say it. I think the game that shocked me the most was Memphis and OKC. I mean, a 51 held point him. Blowout in the playoffs.
Stadium pulse was way too high.
I don't know where to start.
I sat down with my grandma and watched this game, and I promise you, I told her, she looked at the score and she looked at me and asked, are they playing for real? I can't make that up. Shout out to you. I love you, grandma. She asked me, are they playing for real? I said, yes, this is the playoffs. She said, they playing like this in the playoffs? I said, yes. This is bad.
It was just up and down, just uncoordinated. Scottie Pippen Jr., just cardio getting out there.
That Tony Snell line.
Zach Edey forgot. I totally forgot about that. Zach Edey forgot he's no longer in Purdue. Ja Morant. The bomb blew up in his face. I mean, he gave you 17, but at least seven of those came from the free throw line. Just destruction.
I didn't know Marvin Bagley went 8 for 8. He had 17. Shout out to Marvin Bagley.
Yeah, yeah. And one of them was like a half court heave. Jill was hooping.
That's crazy.
He's the X factor. He's the X factor for the series. But no, real talk. So, I think that the depth of the Thunder is going to be really scary for everybody.
Yeah.
I believe, how many points did Shea finish with? Because they sat him early.
He only had 17, I want to say.
He gave him 15.
15?
He gave him 15. How can you blow somebody out by 50 and your best player scores 15?
I mean, overall, like across the board for their starters, I mean, Chet Holmgren gave you 19, Jalen Williams gave you 20.
They finished with 5 or 6 guys with 10 points.
Yeah.
That's scary.
I just think defensively, they're one of the most difficult matchups across the entire NBA, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, you have two great defensive bigs on your roster and Jalen Williams, who I think it's only a certain amount of time before he's in real DPOY sort of talks. He's such a versatile defender, one of the most versatile defenders in the league, in my opinion. So I just think OKC's defensive intensity is going to be a challenge for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
So.
But you got Caruso off the bench. Yeah, you got Dort. And then after they come off, you got Caruso on the floor.
And like, Shea is probably going to be All-NBA defense.
Defensive team? Yeah, he should be.
His defense is underrated for sure.
So I know it's pretty early in the series, but is this a call for concern for the Grizzlies, especially with the game going back to OKC again? They go down 2-0.
Hey, man, get a dustpan. I say get a dustpan. I ain't gonna lie to you.
I think I picked the Thunder to win this series in 5, and it's just because I don't see an out for Memphis. They're just not the floor spacing team that you need. Their half court offense is better than last year, but it's still subpar. I just don't think they match up very well with OKC. So it's gonna be. It kind of reminds me of the Pelicans matchup they had last year. The Pelicans were a playoff team. OKC just kind of ran through them. You know,
was Zion hurt that series?
Zion was definitely hurt that series, but
he beat out the first two games.
Brandon Ingram struggled like,
yeah, he did
immensely. So I just think that this is another one of those type of matchups for OKC where they have the clear advantage across the board.
Moving over to the East, the Bucks are also down one game to the Pacers. Now Damian Lillard does come back tonight.
Could
this be the needle that moves for the Bucks? And if they go down 2-0 with Dame back, what does that mean for the Bucks going
forward?
That
means so much. This is my question to y'all. Do y'all think he's like gonna show up tonight? Like he didn't play for like the last what, 3 weeks of the NBA season, somewhere around there. And now you're coming back down one in a NBA playoff game. Like, you've been running scrimmages for what, a week? Real rap, you've been running scrimmages for a week and watching film. Now you gotta come out and really play ball for real. And he wasn't blowing me away during the season. So I personally wouldn't say that he gonna move the needle. I think it makes it more interesting for sure.
I think he moves the needle. Just because you saw how, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter much, but you saw on the bench, he was talking to Tyrese. Like, he's ready to go out there. He's ready to play. And the Bucks just need somebody else other than Giannis. Kuzma gave you 0, 0, 0, and 0. Like, what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do if you're Giannis when you literally have nobody else to rely on? You know what I'm saying? I always thought that the Bucks had a chance to win the series if Dame played. But if Dame wasn't playing, then Pacers can whoop him.
I think Dame's return is just an opportunity for their role players to slide back into their respective roles. You're not going to be relying, you know, on KPJ and all these different guys, Kuzma, to step up and be a number two option. That's now Dame. That's his rightful position. I expect to see some rust from Dame tonight. But if they go down 2-0, they have the benefit of going back home with arguably a top two player in the NBA today and Dame hopefully getting his legs back underneath him. I'm looking at Giannis. I think at any point in time, he could take this series over. At any point in time, we could see a different result as far as his playmaking ability, the shot making from the roster as well, because we know Dame, his shot making is going to be able to space out the floor a little bit better. There's going to be more attention on him, especially from his ability to pull it out, pull the three out from deep. You know, I just think it's going to be a important factor for the Bucks getting Dame back. But I cannot sleep on this Pacers team, obviously, because the Pacers are a deep roster.
Halliburton's
I think that it might have surprised a lot of people because of the way the Bucks have been playing without Dame towards the end of the season. They fought their way back into the playoffs. They didn't have to play the play-in game. But that's because Giannis was so good as a playmaker. But when you're running into a team as well coached as the Pacers and as deep as the Pacers with just playoff experience, you know, I think this series is going 7. It's going to be a tough matchup regardless. I think this is going 7.
Yeah, for it to go 7, you need Kyle Kuzma to not be cheeks. This was bad. I just looked on Basketball Reference real quick. This is bad. Jit was out there getting cardio for real. You got 2 personal fouls. That's the only stat. That's the only thing that's not a 0. 2 personal fouls. He shot 2 free throws and missed both of them. Like, that's next level cheeks. Like, Nicki Minaj, Ice Spice. Like, this is cheeks. Like, this is really bad.
Yeah, I mean, Giannis had 36-12 with literally no
You couldn't have made a free throw, bro? 2 personal fouls. Like, this is bad. Minus 24.
Yeah. He was just there.
A series I think is going to 7 is that Pistons Knicks series. I do. Personally, what I saw out of Cade last night, he's starting to get I was on the phone with one of my friends who also who does like sports radio and stuff at Florida. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about like the amount of whistles that were in that game. Like, it was a very ref control game, I feel like. But you're starting to see Cade Cunningham get the whistles that Jalen Brunson does. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you have the power to change the series. Because they're starting to view Detroit as a team that can actually make a run. And with a young roster like Detroit has, you have the power to get like wind under their sails. New York obviously is not going to back down. But from what I've seen last night, this could be very well a series that goes to 7.
I don't know. I'm still rocking with the Knicks. I think I picked the Knicks in 6 in the series. I think the first half offensively for the Knicks was awful. I mean, everybody was inefficient. Nobody was really doing anything
at
all.
I'm not sure what the rotation with what Thibodeau was thinking for that rotation on. Jalen Brunson was in the starting 5.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what was up with that. That threw off everybody's like rhythm.
Yeah, and you know how he is as a coach. He's hard-headed. He's going to do what he wants to do. But I think for what they only lost by six.
Yeah.
And I think the Knicks played awful. Like the Knicks played really bad for most of that game, and they only lost by six. I understand that the Pistons are a physical team; they're gonna bat them up. Cat didn't have a very good game, but I think if the Knicks just lock in more, like I think they're fine. I still don't think it as a serious threat, honestly. But shout out to Cade though; he should be All NBA definitely this year.
Yeah, I think that the Pistons have the advantage of maybe being a more motivated team right now, and a player who I look at when I say this is Karl Anthony freaking Towns. Yeah.
Second half started, non-existent.
Karl Anthony Towns comes out in this series. I think he's 23-11, 71% from the field. Looked amazing game one, in my
opinion. Yeah, he did.
In game two, he looked so just disengaged with what was going on, especially in the second half.
Yes.
He didn't seem like he was as aggressive, obviously. And that's just, it's been an issue with him throughout his entire playoff career. Before he had Ant, and when he was the guy, when he got in, he was the secondary guy.
Yep.
And now when he's playing alongside Jalen Brunson, I mean, I wasn't expecting Jalen Brunson to have to backpack the way he did, mm-hmm. or the way he had to do yesterday, just to keep the game close in that second half. I also look at the Pistons and them having an advantage as far as big defenders who can guard Jalen Brunson. And that's just making it more difficult for Brunson to score in the ways he's most effective. It's going to be a physical series throughout. I think that is something that maybe leans towards the Pistons, but you have to hope that Karl Anthony Towns shows up and gives his guy some help, man.
Yeah, he probably got to do some more crying. You know, get into the lane. Oh, my God. Yeah, didn't do enough of that last game. Zero free throw attempts. And they was whistle happy, too.
Last night was K's I understand it moment. For
yeah,
sure.
I understand
it now.
Because OG was definitely giving K some serious issues in game one. K was working on Mikal Bridges. They put OG on him. K was getting shut down. I saw from Cade his ability to score in isolation. I think in the first game, he was really, really reliant on using pick and rolls and using screens. The second game, he was like, no, let me get to my bag by myself, clear out, let me isolate for a second. And I think that made the offense a little bit easy for him.
Yeah, Cade is, we're going to have some real crazy conversations about Cade as we go into the offseason, because he can do it all, man. Like, when he's in his bag, when he's focused, when he's locked in, there's no flaws in his game at all, especially at his size, being able to get to the lane, do the mid-range, even shoot when needed. Like, he can do it all. And I think if he keeps on playing the way he plays, you're right, it might go to seven, and I might lead the Pistons.
Our last topic today is going to be Kawhi Leonard's 39 points on 78% shooting. One, how does his confidence going forward shape the series? Can the Clippers overcome the Nuggets? And where does that rank him currently amongst playoff performances?
San Antonio Spurs training staff, I'll never forgive you ever in life. Y'all have robbed us of a Hall of Fame. He's already a Hall of Fame guy, but
GOAT conversations.
Y'all robbed us of GOAT conversations because y'all didn't want to believe that man. He said he was hurt.
I'm letting you know right now, I said this on the live show. If Kawhi gets three rings, we're going to need to have some serious conversations.
I'm not mad at it. He had 40 on 4 missed shots. That's insane. Like
80%, bro, it was 80%. And he only had like, what, 4 free throws or something? Like, it was real ethical basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Really, he was playing the game the right
playing
way.
Playing the game the right way. You know, real lunch pail guy.
You know, first guy in, last guy out. You know, but yeah, one of the greatest playoff performers of all time. Not enough can be said about this guy. So hopefully he keeps it up. And it would be cool to see him get that third one. I ain't gonna lie to you.
I mean, we're only 2 games in the first series, but no.
How he was looking? Who in the what? I mean,
I think the Clippers, and shout out to EJ, because we definitely trashed this man like week one on the podcast. We were like, what are the Clippers doing this season? Yeah, no, the Clippers are hooping. They are hooping very well, actually. I think in terms of getting the rotations down just to finish games better will help them get through this series with Denver. I wasn't really a fan of like that last 5-minute stretch that they had. That, what was that 5 that was on the floor there? It just looked too small for Denver. And obviously size is going to be something that you're going to need going farther, like later into this series. But it could be a turning point. Justin, you got anything?
I would say that I picked 2 series to go 7. I obviously mentioned the Bucks and Pacers before, and it was this one right here with the Clippers and the Nuggets. I think this is going 7. I've been really impressed with the way that Denver has been able to maintain their composure in this series. Yesterday, I think they had an all-around performance overall, but what was a big factor in them losing was Jokic with 7 turnovers in that game. That was huge. And also Christian Brown being a no-show, absolute no-show, egregious play, especially towards the end of that game.
Yeah.
But as far as Kawhi Leonard, a lot of people don't know this. He's 6th in the NBA amongst active point per game playoff performers.
Yeah.
I think he's, let me pull it up real quick. Yeah, I want to make sure I get this right for my dog. 25 points since 2020, 6 rebounds, 3 stocks in the playoffs on 63% true shooting. Since 2019, you know, the legendary Raptors playoff run, he's number 3 in active playoff scores. Like, Kawhi Leonard is ridiculous. We saw last night what he looks like when he's motivated. And I think this is just signs that we've been seeing the past few seasons. Last year, he was in and out of the playoffs in that Mavs series. When he played, he didn't look the best. He was injured, obviously. The year before, when they played against the Suns, great for that first game. I just think Kawhi is a force to be reckoned with. Whether or not he's had 4 knee surgeries or not, he gets to his bag regardless. Mid-range shot, money. 3-point shot last night, money. Yep. And if they play like this, and if Zubac is able to handle his minutes against Jokic like he was last night, he shot 60% of the field, obviously a force on the boards. And I think he's giving Jokic a little bit of issues inside the paint, too. Yeah. Even though Jokic has still been efficient this series, he still had a triple-double last night. I think the Clippers are really managing the game well. Except for game one, I think they could have handled the in-the-game situation there, too.
Yeah, I mean, talk more about Zubac, man. I love that. He's my most improved player this year. He has been an absolute monster. He's been the real catalyst for this team and sticking in the playoffs and in that run while Kawhi was hurt. I hate it. Well, I kind of understood it because there's a lot of good candidates this year, but I really wanted Tyronn Lue to be in the Coach of the Year finalist as well. He's been absolutely doing his thing. And just Kawhi in general and the Clippers team, if they can keep fighting the way that they're fighting, the Nuggets are a good team. Like, they have a lot going on. Coach fired, all these other moving parts. But, like, if they're going to go to battle like this, we're in for a generational playoff series. I can see every game, like, going to overtime. It's crazy.
Shout out Zoo. Shout out Big Zoo for sure. I think for the last 3 or 4 years, he's been in, like, top 5 center conversations, at least in my mind. He's been phenomenal. Shout out Kawhi with that. He does have a bag. It may be like a brown paper bag, but it is a bag for sure. It's not a flashy bag. It's not a spray ground or anything like that. But he definitely got a bag, and he'll get to it. James Harden looked good. So I saw one or two turnovers that, like, one of, like, he bounced the ball off his shoe. It looked kind of rough, but, I mean, you can't expect him to be perfect.
Yeah, James Harden's an up-and-down playoff performer. He always has been. He might give you 50, then he might give you 10. So it's like having Kawhi to hold him down through all that.
Consistently.
Yeah.
That consistency is key for sure.
All right, fellas. Well, we'll keep in tune with the playoffs. The first round is underway. Some great matchups going on. Hopefully we'll see what the end of these series brings. But now, this has been the Playmakers. We're getting into our best part of the show, our favorite part of the show. The shout-outs. Go first. Shout out God, man. Shout out the fam listening back at home. He's not here right now. Shout out Mike. You know what I'm saying? He bet me that the Magic would beat the Celtics. We bet an entire plate of Nagoya. So I'm looking forward to that double fried rice, steak, and yum yum sauce on his tab. Yeah. Heat in 5. Celtics in 4. And moving on.
Shout out Jesus Christ. Shout out Pope Francis. Shout out Davion Mitchell, the real 45. You know what I'm saying?
What's going on?
Over the place. In no situation should the Pope be next to Davion Mitchell.
You gotta let me rock.
We let you rock too much, and I think that's the issue.
You know, shout out Pope Francis, shout out Davion Mitchell, shout out Tyler Hero. I'd say Heat in 6. They did look scary, but Heat in 6. Shout out to Playmakers.
Man, shout out to God. Shout out to Ty Jerome putting that B to A on y'all team. Shout out to everybody on the Cleveland organization. Shout out to Andrew Berry. Hopefully you go out there and draft Travis Hunter at 2. When is it, on Thursday?
Yeah, on Thursday.
And yeah, man.
I want to say shout out to God, shout out to the family back home. They've been listening and checking in for me. Well, I mean, y'all too, I guess. I want to give a shout out to all the professors and advisors who helped me this semester as it comes to it. And I want to shout out Terry Fontenot. That's sort of sarcastic, but eyes are on you, big bro. Next week, we watch it. Be me a defensive player, bro. I ain't playing around.
All right, that'll do it for us in the studio. Stay tuned for the next one. Halftime of the Playmakers is produced in the studios of WANM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communication at Florida A&M University.